Good afternoon. There were some ambitious proposals sent out to try and reduce our dependency on fossil fuels, and one of those involved or suggested that we could use a portion of our crop residues as a feedstock for biofuel production. When those proposals were made, a number of us working in soil and water conservation were concerned that the other benefits associated with crop residues weren't being accounted in that discussion. A couple of people in our group started to do some synthesis of the existing data to see what kind of effects crop residue removal might have on soil functions and crop production. One of those initial efforts was done by Wally Wilhelm and some colleagues, where they tried to actually go out and look at existing studies and see what level of crop residue had to be retained on a site to sustain soil functions. And what they were looking at was the amount of residue that had to be retained to protect the soil from wind and water erosion, and also the amount of biomass that had to be retained to sustain the soil biota. Once they got some initial estimates for the amount of residue that had to be retained, they did a couple of studies to look at what kind of harvest heights you could do to remove or to retain the amount of residue that was needed to sustain those soil functions. As those concerns associated with residue removal were voiced, things like soil compaction due to the extra passes with the heavy equipment, removal of nutrients in the residue, the potential or increased potential for wind and water erosion and those things, a proposal came out that maybe components of the crop residue could be used as a feedstock, and one of those that was suggested was the cob fraction. Initially, we didn't have any estimates on what amount of biomass we were talking about there, but a couple members of our research group had very large databases that they had collected over the years because of the way we harvest a lot of our research plots. And so they went back, and using those large databases, they were able to determine that in well-fertilized corn crops, there was a fairly consistent ratio between the cob biomass and the grain biomass. And that was substantiated by a report or a paper put out by Jane Johnson and Ardell Halverson about the same time. And that ratio reported by Gary and his group was about 0.2, and what Ardell and Jane reported was about 0.17. So they agreed quite well. The nice part about knowing those ratios is that nobody reports cob biomass, but everybody reports grain biomass. So using those relationships, we can look at published records of grain productivity over the last few years and get an estimate of the amount of cob biomass that's produced. And then making some assumptions about the carbon content of that residue, we can determine the amount of carbon that might be available for carbon offsets if those cobs were used in some kind of a direct combustion process, or the amount of ethanol that might be produced as technology becomes available to do that. But we still didn't have a good handle for what role the cob fraction might be playing in soil and water conservation. So we undertook a study to look at specifically what the cob fraction effects of removing the cob fraction might have on runoff and sediment loss in a producer's field. The study that I'm going to report on was conducted in a producer's field near York, Nebraska. It's a field site that we've been using since 2006. And the experiment at that study site has long strips that extend across the field. And it's replicated four times, and the treatments are either residue retained or residue removed. Within each one of those strips, we found locations in the field that had about a 7% slope, and we installed runoff plots, and then one of those runoff plots were randomly assigned to the cob removal treatment, and one of those we retained the cobs. So what we ended up with was a replicated study that had four treatments, residue retained with cobs retained, residue retained with cobs removed, residue removed with cobs retained, residue removed, cobs removed. And then we used a rainfall simulator to apply a known amount of rainfall for a known duration. And then we applied that under antecedent soil moisture conditions, and then we came back 24 hours later and applied that again under saturated conditions. Here's a couple of shots from the field showing the layout. We've got the metal borders that delineate the runoff plot. As runoff begins, it's collected in this plastic trough at the end of the plot and directed into a bucket. There's a sump pump in the bucket that pumps the water out of that and into a garbage can on the side of the plot. And then when runoff stops, we determine the amount of runoff that's been collected from that plot, resuspend the sediment, and determine the sediment load in that runoff. The other things that we measured, time to initiate runoff, the amount of runoff, and then a subsample was taken to determine sediment load. And then we submitted this runoff samples for a number of chemical analyses. So what we found was that the runoff simulator is well designed. It was able to apply a very consistent amount of rainfall to those plots. It didn't vary from application event to application event. The time to initiate runoff was shorter in plots that had the residue removed than in plots where the residue was retained, which makes sense. The residue, as you have more residue, it's able to absorb more of the applied rainfall, and it delays the amount of time until runoff begins. And then there was an interaction in the time to initiate runoff. When cobs were removed under antecedent moisture conditions, runoff began sooner than when cobs were retained, and that's simply a function of there being a little bit more residue in those plots where the cobs are present, and that delayed the onset of runoff. But when the plots were saturated and all the residue had absorbed all the water it was going to absorb, and so there was no effect there, and runoff was initiated at about the same time in the two treatments. The depth of runoff from all plots was similar. The residue removal treatments did not affect runoff amount, and that represents about 6% of the runoff that was the precipitation that was applied. But in plots where residue was removed, we lost about 30% more sediment. In the residue retained plots, the plots contained about 12.9 megagrams per, well, the residue amount was about 12.9 megagrams per hectare, and that provided about 77% soil cover. In the residue removed plots, it was about 6 megagrams per hectare residue, and that provided about 50% residue or soil cover. So in the residue removed plots, there was substantially more soil surface area available for rainfall impacting the soil surface, detaching soil particles, and then resulting in sediment loss. Some more results. Electric conductivity was similar among the treatments. There was a statistically significant difference in pH between the runs, but it's really of no practical significance. The difference in pH there is relatively small, and the losses of ammonia and water-soluble P were low and were similar among all of our treatments. The loss of nitrate was greater during the saturated run than during the antecedent moisture run, as the residue and soil sat there for 24 hours under saturated conditions. Nitrate was solubilized, and the concentration was higher in the subsequent run. So some conclusions that we reached from this study were that the residue removal resulted in greater sediment loss on this site. Cob removal did not affect sediment loss or nutrient runoff loss at this site. And so the cob fraction may represent a feedstock component that can be used without adversely affecting soil and water conservation. We did a little feasibility study just to see if it's really practical to utilize the cob fraction as a feedstock component. This is the map of Nebraska, obviously, and all the dark green dots represent the corn production parts of the state. And when you overlay a map of the current starch-based ethanol plants on that, you see that they're located where the corn is being grown. And I'm going to concentrate on York County, where the study was conducted. York County is just a little under 150,000 hectares in size, and the year that I collected data for was 2008, and in 2008 about 60% of the county was planted to corn. Corn yield was not quite 12 megagrams per hectare, and when you do all the calculations and conversions, you find out that there was about 1 million megagrams of corn grain produced and about 0.2 million megagrams of cobs produced in that. And if you assume some things about the potential for producing ethanol, that would represent about twice the feedstock that you would need to support a $40 million liter per year ethanol plant. So you'd only have to collect the cobs from about half the corn acres in the county to meet the needs of a plant that size. So I'm I'd like to thank the staff members that helped with the field part of the study and processed the samples and conducted the laboratory analyses. And then I'd also especially like to thank our former cooperators who provided access to the site. So with that, I think I've left a few minutes for some questions. Do you have any? Harvesting cobs. Well, there are some prototype equipment out there where we can harvest them at the same time. I think there is one ethanol plant up near Emmitsburg that's currently trying to utilize cobs, and they're the producers are just dropping them off the back of the combine, and then they're coming through and picking them up again. And Doug, is that
more?
No, that's not. There are prototype systems that there's a group that I've interacted with a little bit in Nebraska where they've developed a system that has actually has another box up on top of the combine where they blow the lighter residue off with a blower and then pick that up and just lift it up to the top and then periodically dump it into a wagon off to the side so they do get it in the same pass. And I think you're working with some people out of the state that have other approaches for doing the same thing. But in my mind, it would be advantageous to not let them hit the ground because you just end up with soil in there, and that just causes problems and creates a need for another pass through the field or more. So, but it's also you need to work with the farmers and make it something that they can get into their management system. Yeah, Doug.
Yeah, I understand you correctly that on your residue removal equipment that you still have about 50% surface cover and then still have the increase and et cetera. So that kind of raises the flag for those that are making projections on 30%.
Yeah, and the only thing I'd add to that is that this is on a 7% slope with a rainfall simulator that was applying a fairly intensive rainfall event, so it probably represents a worst-case scenario. But, yes, I agree that it's a concern. Yes?
Right. Could you describe what's the procedure for removing the corn cobs and the field corn cobs, keeping in mind the spatial variability and distribution of these cobs?
Are you talking about how we did it in this study? When the farmer went through the field, he had a spreader on the back of his combine that he just distributed, and we just assumed that they were randomly distributed. I know it's not perfect. We just went through and handpicked the cobs out of one randomly selected plot and left them in the other one.
So it's not the normal combined process?
No. No, this isn't it. We removed them after the harvest. They came out the back of the combine and were distributed within the field, and then we installed our plots and hand removed the cobs from one of the two plots.
And that's where I see the problem, because if you look at during the combine process, there is a different distribution ratio between the cobs and the residue. If you come after and distribute the cups. And that's kind of something we may consider evaluating that. I'm sure engineers probably would have probably have to come out with that. That feels to them.
I understand the question that you're asking, Monty. What they did is they picked up the cobs off the one where the residue was on the ground. The only place the distribution of cobs would come into what they were studying would be on the other set of plots where you remove the residue and then sprinkle the cobs back. I'm sure you had removed residue and cobs returned.
But actually, the cobs were still on that part of the field as well. Yeah, that, the removal process wasn't...
Well, they didn't catch it. Yeah, the removal process didn't catch it.
No.
So he tried to remove them. Yeah, they did, all they did is remove them from one and left them where the combine put them on the other. So it wasn't a replacement.
Yeah, and I can't say we didn't keep track, I guess, of the bio. We don't know if it was the same amount of cobs or same mass of cobs that were removed from all the plots. We didn't.
Do you know what's the ratio of cobs to what you use? I'm personally going to
0.2, Gary. Yeah, it's about 20% of the corn biomass is cob.
And the Johnson paper was much drier. Years of data in multiple states, and that ranged from 0.17 to 0.23, so the average is right on that 0.2.
Yeah, there's